water, I began to relish the long, slow, balletic curves it let you make through the water, stretched out at full length behind it, instead of swimming in the normal position with your arms by your side or on your chest. Following the contours of the reef became like skiing in ultra-slow motion, an almost zen-like idea. I began to enjoy it a lot, though after 15 minutes of experimenting with it I began to feel I had exhausted its repertoire and began to look forward to swimming under my own power again. I suspect that it's probably a machine best suited to people who want to experience a dive but don't want to bother with the business of learning to use buoyancy jackets and so on. I returned to the boat and we hauled the thing back up out of the water. Well, I'd driven the sub-bug. But over lunch, I was worried about the total collapse of my absurd comparative test drive plan and discussed my thoughts with Ian and Jane. "I think we just have to think about the comparative test drive on a kind of conceptual basis," I said. "And we have to award some points. Obviously, the sub-bug wins some points for being portable, up to a point. You can take it on a plane, which you wouldn't do with a manta ray, or at least not with a manta ray we liked, and I think that we probably like all manta rays on principle, don't we? Your manta ray is going to be a lot faster and more manoeuvrable, and you don't need to change its tank every 20 minutes, but the big points that the sub-bug wins are for the fact that you can actually get on it. I think it has to get a lot of credit for that, if you're thinking of it as transport. But then let's turn the whole thing around again. The reason you can't actually ride a manta ray is a sound ecological one, and on just about every ecological criterion, the manta ray wins hands down. In fact, any form of transport that you can't actually use would be a major ecological benefit, don't you think?" Ian nodded understandingly. "Can I get on and read my book now, please?" said Jane. For the afternoon dive, Ian said he wanted to take me in a different direction from the boat. I asked him why, and he looked noncommittal. I followed him down into the water, and slowly we flippered our way across to a new part of the reef. When we reached it, the flat top of the reef was about 4 feet below the surface, and the sunlight dappled gently over the extraordinary shapes and colours of the brain coral, the antler coral, the sea ferns and anemones. The stuff you see beneath the water often seems like a wild parody of the stuff you see above it. I remember the thought I had when first I dived on the barrier reef years ago, which was this was all the stuff that people used to have on their mantelpieces in the '50s. It took me a while to rid myself of the notion that the reef was a load of kitsch. I've never learned the names of a lot of fish. I always swat them up on the boat and forget them a week later. But watching the breathtaking variety of shape and movement keeps me entranced for hours, or would do if the oxygen allowed. If I were not an atheist, I think I would have to be a Catholic, because if it wasn't the forces of natural selection that designed fish, it must have been an Italian. I was moving forward slowly in the shallows. A few feet in front of me, the reef gradually dipped down into a broad valley. The valley